Good afternoon, and thank you for joining the teleconference today. I am John Hartgen, ABI's Public Affairs Manager. I will give a brief introduction, and then we will proceed with the question and answer period. To ask a question, I would ask that you state your name and media outlet prior to your question. I will then direct your question to one of our experts for discussion. With the announcement today by President Barack Obama that Chrysler Motors would be filing for Chapter 11 protection, the American Bankruptcy Institute has arranged for experts in automotive proceedings and business bankruptcy law for comment and to take your questions regarding issues surrounding the filing and distress in the automotive industry. Details are still emerging on the Chrysler case, so our experts will do their best to answer your questions and share their insights with you. Joining us today are Deborah L. Thorne, a partner at Barnes & Thornburg in Chicago. Deborah concentrates her practice in the areas of creditors' rights, bankruptcy, financial restructurings, secured lending, and commercial transactions. Her clients have included a variety of companies, including automotive supply. Also joining us is Professor Stephen J. Lubin, who is the Daniel J. Moore Professor of Law at Seton Hall University School of Law. Professor Lubin specializes in corporate finance, particularly in issues concerning corporate debt and financial distress. Cheryl L. Tobey serves as co-chair of Dyckman Gossett's Bankruptcy and Corporate Restructuring Group in Detroit, where she has extensive experience in addressing problems associated with critical supplier issues. I'd like to thank our speakers for joining us today and taking time out of their busy schedules to speak to this very important event. So to kick off the discussion, I'd like to pose a question to Professor Stephen Lubin about large companies emerging from the Chapter 11 process and what some of the issues are in regard to a large company emerging from Chapter 11, and what his thoughts are in terms of the time frame laid out for Chrysler emerging from bankruptcy. Professor Lubin?
Thanks. As I understand it, plan in this particular case is not unlike what occurred in Lehman Brothers. There's going to be a filing, or there has been already a filing, which will be followed by a fairly quick 363 sale of the key assets, the assets that Chrysler wants to keep going forward. It's a 363 sale because that refers to Section 363 of the Bankruptcy Code. So that part of Chrysler will come out of bankruptcy through this sale process pretty quickly, but I think we should expect that the remainder of the case could take at least a couple of years, given the size of Chrysler, to resolve, and perhaps longer, depending on how contentious the issues are between the creditors. Now, of course, that timeline also depends on the sale hearing happening when the administration has said it would like to see the sale hearing happen. And that hearing not dragging out, we've already seen that there's certainly some creditors who are gearing up to present their objections at that sale hearing.
Thank you, Professor Lubin. And Debbie or Cheryl, would there be anything else you'd like to add to the discussion about large companies emerging from the Chapter 11 process?
This is Cheryl Tobey. No, I think the professor covered it. I think that a lot of the ability to move this along is obviously somewhat dependent upon the court, its ability to make quick, important decisions in the process and to coordinate and control the situation. And that will also have a big impact, of course, on how this proceeds.
Okay, thank you. And are there any questions out there from the participants who joined the call?
Yeah, this is Brian O'Connor from Detroit News.
Okay.
So the so-called quick and easy bankruptcy that the president referred to would really only just be as it relates to the sale under 363.
I think that's right. That the quick and easy part of it is the. Well, I don't know about how easy, but at least quick part of it will be the sale of the viable assets out through the 363 process. So that Chrysler, the operating entity, will be out of bankruptcy creditors resolving their claims. That would be a regular bankruptcy process.
So they would continue to, I mean, are there any assets that are left at that point for them
this is Deborah Sorn. I think, you know, there would be certain assets that the new cleansed Chrysler wouldn't want. I mean, for example, they may want to leave some dealer agreements behind if they don't want certain dealers. This would be an opportunity for those to be rejected. Others would be assumed. So it would be a way to take the good, bring that money into the estate, and then deal with what is left as the bad, and as well as the, you know, whatever proceeds there are from the sale, and to also deal with, you know, the creditor's claims to those proceeds.
So the proceeds from the 363 sale would be part of what's available to creditors?
This is Cheryl Tobey. I don't know that to be the case. I don't know that we've seen it. Deborah, do you?
Well, I think we should all say there are only three pleadings that are on the docket right now, and none of them is a sale motion, so we may be really speculating.
Right. I mean, yep. Based on the White House press release, it does seem like that they're going to put some money, which I guess qualifies as a sale proceeds, into old Chrysler. But most of that will probably go to secured creditors, it looks like.
Yeah, this is Cheryl Tobey. I don't know that there is going to be any proceeds. I mean, we just don't know yet how this is going to be set up, and all of us are trying to interpret what we see. Kind of envisioned a different process from what I'm reading here. So the fact is I don't know if there's going to be any proceeds from that sale, but there is likely to be assets in excess of what they're transferring. In other words, if they're taking just certain lines and putting it into a new company, that would leave for plants and other types of assets that they don't see as critical to that those operations remaining with the remaining within the bankruptcy estate, and then there would likely be some process to dispose of those other assets, and until we see how they what they file as far as the 363 and identify as the assets to be transferred versus staying with the other company, we really don't know what that'll be, how much those are worth, if any, and therefore what kind of distributions could be made to the other creditors.
But at that point, whatever assets are transferred into the 363 process are free and clear and to operate outside of bankruptcy.
Correct. That would be their goal, would be to transfer the assets free and clear of all liens, claims, and interest. That's
right.
What 363 provides
right.
for.
It might be a transfer. It might be leaving other assets behind. It might be, you know, money from the government or fiat or whoever. But however that gets accomplished, the transfer is completed, and that's that, and they just take care of what's left behind.
Correct. Well, they would, correct. They would transfer those assets to the, we'll call it NewCo. It may be that the purchase price is part of the fiat value that it's contributing, something like that, but the fact is there would be this new entity free and clear of liens, claims, and interest. They could, within that process, decide to assume certain liabilities or contracts to put into that new company and leave other things behind. And then the process would have to continue to address the remainder of the assets in case.
Okay. Just, you know, that's something I haven't encountered before. Before you guys go on, is this common, these 363 sales?
More and more in this economic downturn, this is Debbie Sorn, there are most cases now are a sale of assets. There are very few real restructurings in this downturn.
Sure. Who can get, you know, capital?
Right.
You know, and even when you can get can get, you know, financing, it's usually for such a limited period of time. The 363 approach is typically the only thing that will accommodate the lender's time frame.
I see. Okay. Thank you.
It sounds like more of joined the call, and welcome to our teleconference. This is John Harkin of the ABI, and right now I'd like to ask a question again of Professor Lubin regarding the venue in which the Chrysler filing was made. Professor Lubin, based off of your research, you have studied the issue of corporate bankruptcies and where they are filed. And so I was wondering if you could discuss some of the issues and what some of the reasoning is for a company to file in, say, the Southern District of New York, where Chrysler is filed, versus filing, in the case of Chrysler, instead of filing in Michigan. And so, Professor Lubin, would you care to expand on some of those issues?
Well, you know, I think the short answer is probably predictability. With this very aggressive timeline that the administration has here, the bankruptcy professionals no doubt wanted to make sure that they could predict beforehand exactly how this was going to play out, and obviously they can't entirely, but they can predict it better when they go to a jurisdiction like New York or Delaware that they have a lot of experience with. So they know, for example, that the Southern District of New York has recently seen Lehman Brothers, which has gone through a very similar kind of structure where there was a very quick sale of Lehman Brothers' key assets to Barclays. And, you know, Judge Peck was willing to hear that hearing all day long and enter that sale order at 2 a.m. That's essentially what they're going to be looking for here again in Chrysler.
Okay, thank you. It sounds like a few more have joined our call, and again, this is John Harkin of the ABI. At this point of the teleconference, I'd like to open it up to the press who have joined the call. And I just ask that to ask a question of our panel, that you please state your name and media outlet, and we will then direct your question, and our experts will discuss it. So with that, are there any questions from the press who have joined the call here?
This is Brian O'Connor from the news again. I think one question that I could ask is what these debt holders who are sort of being characterized as recalcitrant, you know, which is not certainly not our word. What advantage or disadvantage they might have in this kind of bankruptcy setting?
Okay. Debbie or Cheryl, would you like to field this question about creditors in a proceeding such as this?
Deb's being silent. Deb, do you want to, or do you want?
You know, I don't know exactly who the recalcitrant creditors are, so it's a little hard for me to speak to that.
Sure.
I mean, we know there certainly has been statements that they are. I am assuming that by filing the bankruptcy, there's a thought that the leverage in dealing with those dissenting creditors may be heightened, and so that now they're in a bankruptcy, they may be able to put pressure on them.
The administration?
The administration or the other secured creditors who have agreed to go
along. Or the UAW or,
right.
or whoever.
Mm-hmm. Because there's a judge now that may make a decision. For them.
This is Cheryl Tobey. I think it's possible that the other view as well is that outside the bankruptcy arena, they couldn't force a sale over their objection. And if in bankruptcy, I think that may be able to be accomplished, but why the debt holders really find that to be advantageous and putting it in is hard for us to decipher. I think there are some things that they're going to argue within the bankruptcy context as far as whether you can sell the assets if they're secured creditors, whether you could sell assets over a secured creditor's objection.
Mm-hmm.
There are cases addressing that, and similar type of legal arguments that they'll attempt to assert. Within that context, it's hard to, you know, oftentimes they'll try to utilize that, certain creditors will, arguments within the bankruptcy context, and then depending on how the wave of the case is going, a lot of this debt trades. And so sometimes they may feel that they'll get a, the wave may be in such a circumstance that they can, they'll be able to trade that debt, for example, for a little higher than what they would have been able to get through a consensual deal.
So they might be able to do a little more horse trading in bankruptcy.
By utilizing arguments within the bankruptcy code, making the debt more attractive, for example, or making it appear for those who would sort of anticipate how it might come out and whether there's a chance that some of the arguments they may prevail on.
So they could make their own debt more attractive to
correct.
Get more than the,
correct.
For instance, the
correct.
29 cents on the dollar that
correct.
The last deal was offering. I see.
Right. And so I would suspect there may be some of that anticipation. Now, that, of course, could backfire completely as well because they could have held up, they could have had something through a pre-petition negotiated deal. And, in fact, the it may completely, the judge or the courts may hold completely against them or the wave of the arguments could turn against them so that they're unable to trade on that debt at a higher price. They may, in fact, lose.
Okay. Are there any other questions from our press who have joined the call?
Hi, John.
Yes.
It's Emily Chasen from Reuters. Thanks. I have a question about whether there are any precedents of this type of 363 sale in this large of a company.
Besides Lehman Brothers?
Besides Lehman Brothers. Are there other cases where this has worked, and what kind of objections have people typically launched to this sale?
Another one that comes to mind is actually the sale of TWA to American Airlines. Not quite as big, but still a pretty big company. TWA filed its third bankruptcy with basically the sole purpose of selling itself to American Airlines. You know, the typical objections are that the value paid in the sale is too low, that more value should be paid, so that there'll be money to pay lower down in the financial structure.
This is Cheryl Tobey. Hi, Emily. How are you? It appears that they are that the debt is arguing that there's some that through the process that's being proposed, they're violating certain distribution schemes in the bankruptcy code.
What do you mean by distribution schemes?
So, in other words, the bankruptcy code typically has a distribution scheme of distributions to secured debt up to the value of their secured debt, administrative expense gets paid next, then unsecured debt, then equity. I mean, that's sort of just the short general overview. And sometimes when a certain kind of plan or sale process is implemented, it may be done in a mechanism or a manner which somebody may argue changes that priority scheme in violation of the bankruptcy code. And it appears from the little we have that that is part of their argument, is that they're not, that a portion of the secured debt is not being treated in a manner in which it would be entitled to be treated in the bankruptcy code. Having said that, I'm sure that this has been well thought out, and that there's two sides to that story.
Emily, if I could, this is Stephen Lovin, just to add a little bit more. I think that's absolutely right. I think, in particular, the secured creditors have been complaining about the treatment of the unions, although I think that argument somewhat neglects the fact that the unions have a degree of formal power that exceeds that of the secured creditors, or informal power, I should say. Namely, if Chrysler is going to survive this, they need to keep the unions happy. And they don't need to keep their secured creditors that happy.
Okay, and are there any additional questions from the press who have joined today?
I guess the only question left is, is this sort of, do these experts sort of see this thing working and in some way producing, a Chrysler that's viable and worth more than simply parceling it out in a liquidation?
Well, this is Debbie Thorne. I mean, certainly having the opportunity to shed your debt and kind of come out clean gives you a real advantage. I just noted while we were on this call over the line that Chrysler just announced it's going to close all of its operations for 30 to 60 days, which throws another monkey wrench into the whole scenario in terms of the suppliers. But if Chrysler can come out without, well, it's going to come out with a fair amount of debt owed to the United States government, which is going to have to pay back over the next couple of years. But it certainly will have a lot less unsecured debt coming out. Even with the assumption, it's going to be able to get rid of a lot of bad assets and bad claims.
This is actually Emily again. I have a question on the 30 to 60 day thing. It's just thinking about that time frame of trying to do the 363 sale in that shorter time. Is it possible that the 363 sale could happen before there's a creditors committee?
Very unlikely.
I think
very unlikely.
A committee will be formed by next week.
Okay.
The court would want to have a committee in place typically before it would make those kinds of determinations. And they're, like Deborah said, they're ordinarily formed within a week.
I mean, I think in a case like this, it moves to the head of the line.
Okay.
All right. Thank you. And, I think this would be a good part of the teleconference to break out the crystal ball, and going back to Brian's question about how this proceeding might unfold, I'd just like to give Professor Lubin, Cheryl, and Debbie the opportunity to give their insights on how they think this proceeding might unfold, as well as what their thoughts are for the reporters and press joining today, what they should key into in terms of this proceeding. And so right now I'd like to take the proverbial crystal ball and hand it over to Professor Lubin for his insights.
I mean, to answer the question about will it work, I suspect it will work. It may not be entirely clean. I mean, Lehman Brothers wasn't a perfect sale hearing, written about that, but the process in the end seems to have essentially worked, and I suspect it will essentially work for Chrysler. It may not be perfect, but it will probably work. The big question for me going forward is how much, if any, will be left on the table for unsecured creditors, at least those unsecured creditors who are not going to have an ongoing relationship with the new Chrysler. I'm not sure that there's going to be a lot left there. It looks like the secured creditors are going to take up a lot of the remainder here.
Thank you, Professor Lubin. And just taking the crystal ball and handing it over to Debbie and Cheryl, just want to see what your insights might be as to this proceeding, how it might unfold, and some of the key things that the reporters should be looking to with the Chrysler filing.
Well, this is Debbie. I think that, one of the interesting things over the next couple of days will be, I mean, I know that trucks were stopped today for deliveries of parts. There's a lot of loose ends. I think there'll be a fair amount of chaos over the next couple of days although the White House says that creditors are going to be paid in the ordinary course who are suppliers. until some of that shakes out, because I know, at least within the supplier community, there's a terrific amount of uneasiness today. And we'll see what trucks arrive. And it'll also be interesting if they're going to close down for 30 or 60 days. I mean, what parts do they really want, and what happens to those suppliers who have manufactured parts ready to deliver and now are not going to get paid for parts they've already manufactured? So the ripple, I think, within the supplier community will be, there'll be a lot of impact there.
Okay, thank you. And let's see, Cheryl, is there anything else you'd like to add to the discussion as to how things might unfold in this filing?
No, I think it's been covered. I think, obviously, we're all well aware of the potential economic impact. And as a person in Detroit, obviously, I have a keen interest, and it really affects the nation overall. I think there's been an underestimation of the potential impact and ripple effect that could occur. So we certainly want to see a good, efficient process take place. And the concerns will be, however, through this process, there's, as Deborah alluded to, there's the Chrysler shutdowns. GM has also announced manufacturing shutdowns for a period of time. And so there will be some economic impact from that, regardless as to whether you're currently paying suppliers for your current production or not, because the production will have diminished significantly. And I think that causes a grave concern. And but obviously, the hope is that this will come out and create a manufacturing base, and that all, you know, a lot of these companies will succeed eventually and be better off than if we certainly had gone into a liquidation of these companies. But how this will impact the economy overall is yet to be seen.
Okay, thank you. And I just want to open it up again to the reporters who have joined the call today. If you have any additional questions to ask our panel, we would be more than happy to accommodate. Are there any additional questions out there from the participants?
Hi, this is Charlie Herman at ABC. I just dialed in. So, and maybe this question has been asked already, but the one thing I'm sort of very curious about here, and let me see if I can go to my notes here, if I can find them, is just this whole issue. There's a lot of talk about the 363. I'm sure you've talked about this, and I apologize if you're repeating it, but, you know, for these creditors who didn't like the deal that was being offered them, sorry, I'm just trying to make sure that I have the specific here. Basically, this question of can they derail, you know, there's a lot of talk that, gee, everything's all online, it'll take 30 to 60 days to do it through a 363, but aren't there a lot of questions about whether or not these creditors have the right to veto based on what sort of credit they have? If it's an independent claim, couldn't they basically say 363 sale, would a judge allow that to go through if that judge believed that there was a sufficient claim by these creditors that required a better deal for them? I mean, basically, are we subverting the sort of the system here of who goes first to get money if the creditors are jumped over by they don't get what they should get and it goes to others, the union or whatnot? Maybe I mean, my question's not very clear here.
Okay.
You know, because the smaller ones put out a statement basically saying this is practically violation of the rule of law, that they are the senior, they're up first before you go to the junior debt holders.
Well, this is Stephen Lumpen. Maybe I can take a shot at that. We have talked about it a little bit, but I think this goes back to a point I did raise earlier, that these creditors are senior as a matter of legal right, but they're largely complaining about the unions who have agreed lesser legal rights, but they have more practical rights, and the practical rights is they have an ability to shut down Chrysler.
Right.
And Chrysler has every incentive to keep them happy.
Right.
So, you know, there is a little bit of a tension there between the what your formal legal rights are and what your power is, I guess I would say. On the 363 issue, too, I think it's important not to use the concept of a 363 sale with voting on a Chapter 11 plan, because they're pretty distinct, especially in the Second Circuit, which is includes New York.
What's that?
The New York courts are pretty liberal in authorizing 363 sales. So, I mean, these creditors will have a chance to object, but they won't have a formal vote.
Okay.
For the 363 sales.
So they can object, but... They can object, but no chance to vote on whether or not it will go forward.
Yeah, so, I mean, to the extent people are worrying, you know, that they have a hold-up vote here, the usual Chapter 11 voting rules, that's not really at issue in a 363 sale.
But what happens if they do have an independent claim that's, you know, not syndicated through the larger debt holders? I mean, basically, can a cram down go through, and is 30 to 60 days legit?
Well, see, they don't have to do a cram down in 30 to 60 days. They just have to get the 363 sale done in 30 to 60 days. And then they could, I mean, certainly the rest of the folks on the line should feel free to jump in, but my sense is that they will probably have a big, giant fight over the 363 sale, and then the issue will just probably dissipate after that.
I mean, the thing to remember on the 363 sale, when Chrysler comes in and recommends this, and I presume there will be a number of creditors who also think it's a good idea, the court's going to look at, is this in the best business judgment of Chrysler, and does this make sense in that way, and we'll make a determination. So I think the professor's point is well taken that, I mean, this is really a business judgment at this point. It's not a voting. Obviously, people can make objections, but it will not be the same process that would go through in terms of a plan, in terms of the number of creditors supporting a plan.
Is this common? I mean, you have this discussion by these smaller creditors saying, you know, that there's a rule of law and procedure, and basically they're being jumped over and not being given due consideration, and they're not getting their sort of due, I don't want to say due rights, it's going too far, but maybe it is. I mean, they seem to really be saying, look, this is terrible the way that this is going forward.
This is Cheryl Tobey. I think what the issues are likely to be, again, and we did sort of discuss this earlier, but that's fine. We don't have a problem with you asking a question, certainly, but and we welcome it, I think, but for the others, we're kind of repeating. I think that the issues are likely to come down to, and from what I can gather from the pleading or the White House press sheet, et cetera, so far, is that you have a distribution mechanism in the bankruptcy code, and these appear to be secured debt that may have liens against assets that are being proposed to be sold, and they're stating that you cannot sell these assets and make distributions over my objection, is the easy sort of the short of it. And they're saying that outside of bankruptcy, you couldn't force them. They weren't agreeing to the process, which then forced the situation into bankruptcy and then goes before court, and then they'll make those arguments before the bankruptcy judge. In a 363 sale, what happens is the assets are sold free and clear of liens, claims, and interest. And there are rules regarding how that is done. And they will come in, likely, and argue that it just simply can't be done over the objection. And my guess is that this has been thought out, and people feel strongly that it can be.
And I guess the other final question there, if it's a 363 sale goes through, could theoretically someone else swoop in and try and buy up those assets from Chrysler, or is it already promised as a word of fiat?
Typically, sales are subject to higher and better bids. However, that is the typical, and this is obviously somewhat of an atypical case. So,
case, if wanted to, another auto company could swoop in, but most likely that probably won't happen here.
Well, you also have to look at what the practicalities, likelihood is, et cetera, because they're talking about fiat contributing a value estimated at $8 to $10 billion. And again, we don't have any details as to how this would be accomplished. One scenario may be that that is in effect part of the purchase price, along with maybe the debt that's other amounts that are being contributed in some mechanism here. And does somebody have that kind of value to exceed that? And I think it's probably, you know, practically unlikely. So even if you were to argue that you could credit bid or anything of the like, would that exceed the kind of value being contributed?
And I guess the final question, do the three of you believe that this 30 to 60 days is actually really, is that viable? Is that really, can we really believe that in 60 days a new Chrysler could emerge?
I think all of us believe a sale could be conducted within that time.
Yeah,
that everybody speak for themselves, but I think we believe that a basic sale could be accomplished, that the case itself won't come out, and Professor, you addressed that earlier.
Yeah, exactly. The 363 sale could happen in 30 to 60 days. I think Lehman Brothers is an example of that. I'm not sure if it happens quite within that time frame, but it was pretty early on in the case. But, of course, there is, you know, some stub of Lehman Brothers that's going to continue to be, not reorganized, but liquidated in the bankruptcy process. But Lehman Brothers brokerage assets have gone off to Barclays and have been, you know, in use now for several months.
Yeah, I think that you will see a sale motion filed within the next 7 days. I will be surprised if it wasn't over the weekend.
What did you say, sale to move? What was
the sale motion will be filed pretty quickly.
Okay.
I'm sorry, who was that speaking?
Debbie Thorne.
Thanks, Ms. Thorne.
Yeah, and as we indicated earlier, upon formation of creditors, this process will probably roll in pretty fast.
Great. Thank you.
I have to go, but thank you all. Thank you, Mr. Harkin.
Thank you, Brian. And just one final time, is there any additional press out there that would like to ask questions of our panel before we let them go for the day here?
Okay. Hello? This is Anthony Kim, reporter with DebtWire. I was thinking I got in a little bit late, but I just had one couple questions, quick questions, actually. First, according to President Obama's speech, it seemed like this bankruptcy case would go pretty quickly. According to people I've been talking to as well, we have some stakeholders on board with some sort of restructuring plan, some kind of idea. You know, this Chapter 11 case has just served to kind of steamroll over these small lenders who are holding out right now. If this is the case, why are we assuming this 363 sale? What can Chrysler achieve through that sale?
Well, go ahead.
Am I missing something completely?
Okay, Professor Levin, I'm sorry, you were saying?
Oh, I'm sorry. I think the 363 sale accomplishes the timeline. I don't think it's realistic to expect that a formal Chapter 11 plan could be confirmed in 30 to 60 days when you haven't even begun voting on it yet, or for that matter, drafting the plan, as far as I know. I mean, maybe they have, but the 363 sale, as we've seen and in several cases, can be done very quickly. It gets the operating assets out of Chapter 11 quickly, and then you can let the remainder run its course.
Okay, and does that encompass your full question before we wrap up the panel today?
I get that does answer my question. Thank you.
All right, and I'd just like to wrap up today's teleconference by thanking our speakers on the call today, Ms. Deb Thorne, Professor Stephen Lubin, and Ms. Cheryl Toby, for their insight and answers to the questions that have been posed. And I'd like to also thank our participants on today's teleconference. You as members of the press can feel free to call on ABI whenever you have a question concerning bankruptcy or insolvency, and especially with regard to a case such as Chrysler's, which may be complex, for clarification or insight. Again, thank you to our speakers, and thank you to those who participated in today's call. I'm John Hartgen with ABI, and that concludes today's teleconference.